here we are again, little crows. I can't help but notice that you have come back for season 3. And who can blame you? There's a lot of goodness to come in this season. Let me lay out some of it for you. First, there will not be any consistent release of further Corporation episodes. As you may remember, I got into some serious dreck with the last one. And the one before that. And the one before that. Well, pretty much every single time I release a dossier on the corporations, my life gets more complicated. Which is fine, but I probably stuck my neck out too far with Ares, and now I need to lay low. I have been keeping my eye on Neonet, though. Second, expect a more diligent focus on the history again for the time being. I miss dishing out consistent truth to the non-coerced masses. Third, the Shadowing the Runners segments will be inconsistent moving forward. As I mentioned way back when, the 2050s were sort of a golden age for the Shadows, and there was a lot to talk about, and every year held some sort of mystery or must-discuss run or runner. Not so with the 2060s, Crows. In the 60s, the runners found themselves in a time of transition. Some got out of the game, many died, some took a break, and the crop that stepped in to fill the void were of a slightly different breed. Not as prone to the spotlight, not as prone to the world-changing runs. Of course, those are broad strokes, and there'll be plenty to talk about still, but it will only be when the mood strikes me. Lastly, for posterity's sake, I will continue venting about Mr. Pink, DeForest, Gowan, and the others, so that if something does happen, you little crows will know what happened and how to avenge me. Also, it's really cathartic to get some of that dreck off my chest. But from here on out, it's going to be mostly history. And here we go. But before we start, I want to indulge in some typical season-beginning neo-anarchist archival audio awesomeness. Strap in. For the last few centuries, the world has been steadily and inevitably moving towards an egalitarian neo-anarchist culture where no one is coerced, and in which the individual, whether in voluntary groups or alone, has the freedom to decide what is in their own self-interest. There is no longer any reason, whether economic or social, for allowing or submitting to coercive governmental or corporate control. Just as technological and educational advances took the world's economics and politics from tribalism to imperialism and back, so now it will lead its current corporate feudalism to a neo-anarchist ideal. Hold on to this one principle. No rational adult should be coerced into doing something that they have not freely and willingly chosen to do. Therefore, individuals shall be free to pursue their own chosen goals and dreams. Yet, the current megacorporations will never willingly give up any power to allow this to happen. Although they embrace the very technology and education that allows the principles of neo-anarchism to take root, they use these technologies to reinforce their monopolistic stranglehold on the populace, and they suppress the free flow of education that could upturn them. But the fact is, with this technology and education, there is no longer any need for the corporations in order to efficiently produce and sell goods and services. But getting rid of the corporate factories would dismantle the megacorporations' bases of power, and therefore they must and will resist the change. We, who are the heralds of neo-anarchism, must fight to cast off the chains that the megas have forced onto humanity. Once we do, the rest will fall into place. But in taking down the megas, we must be cautious not to destroy the very technology and education that will give us the culture that we long for. Beyond bullets and spells, we have to rely more heartily on the more subtle but more powerful weapon of information. By bringing their lies to the light, we will reveal that the propped-up social contract between the governments and the masses is invalid. When the people are fully informed, and when this demonic feudal capitalism crumbles rightly into the dust, our paradise will arrive. And that is why I am coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix. This is the Anarchy and Podcasting Network, and I am Opti. Welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. While the world has moved on from the golden age of the Shadowrun, that doesn't mean that time stood still. Bizarre things happened in the 2060s, so let's get to it. Let's lead with some world politics, shall we? In Azatlan, war hero and current Azatlan president Enrico Silva was elected to the Azatlan Senate in 2060. On March 17th, an uneasy agreement is reached between the anarchist and corporate zones in Berlin, which allows for the coexistence of both within the city. I liked it better before, honestly. On April 30th, the UN passes Resolution 3031 with the explicit purpose of regulating the influence of economic powers in questions that should be answered by politics. The Commission on Megacorporate Affairs makes regular use of Resolution 3031 while policing corporate activities. In the summer, a history of the Waken world was published by a chummer named Professor John Maniha called Dump Shock, A Brief History of the Awakened World. It was a bestseller. In October, an island appeared in the Pacific Ocean about 300 kilometers off the California coast. It was called Dunkelzahn's Island, and even before it showed up, it was bequeathed by Dunkelzahn to Federated Boeing in his will. However, when Federated snooped out the island, they found little to like. Therefore, when pirates killed the small detail that was there, the personnel was not replaced, leaving the island abandoned. In the November elections, UCAS President Kyle Hefner and Vice President Nadia Dabiar were re-elected by a landslide. Meanwhile, to the south, Cheryl Cundiff, a decorated veteran of the Aztlan invasion of Texas, and her running mate Brad Williams are elected President and Vice President of the CAS. On December 31st, after long years of infighting, Justin Rockefort was able to claim the title of Voice of the Ogun and is awarded with the talon clippings of Dunkelzahn that were left in his will. Moving on to the corporate history of 2060, we have to return to the event that dominated this year and the last, the Renraku Arcology shutdown. In January, the UCAS Army quarantined the area surrounding the Arcology. But on the 18th, the rogue AI Deus, which had taken over the Arcology, sent out five Blues, otherwise known as Deus' security forces, out of the Arcology covered by an illusion. Once out, they opened fire, killing almost three dozen Renraku and UCAS personnel. The next month, Inazo Aneki, the Renraku CEO, took an indefinite leave of absence, replaced by Haruhiku Nakata. At that same time, a file was posted to Shadowland which revealed to the world that the Arcology had been taken over by an artificial intelligence. Reports of brutal experimentation on humans just fuels the Shadow community's acceptance of the utter horror that the Renraku Arcology had become. And it doesn't get much better for the rest of the year. In March, another artificial intelligence shut down the Seattle Matrix grid for 11 minutes. Those on the Seattle grid during that time suffered psychotic episodes, memory loss, and even brain death. No official explanation was given. There is an official explanation, Crows, and I got it. But unfortunately, that is a long, long story that we'll have to wait for our episode next season on The History of the Mystery of the Matrix. On March 26th, Renraku's corporate court representative Navros Chandaria is killed by a terrorist bomb while she met with India's Secretary of Commerce, Jawar Prasad. In April, Yves Akalan is placed on the corporate court representing Cross Applied Technologies, filling the spot left open by the death of Renraku's representative. Also in April, Shikei Nakatomi of Fuchi begins buying huge amounts of stock in Renraku. At the same time, Renraku started buying large portions of Fuchi Corporation. On June 14th, the Shiawase Corporation buys all remaining Fuchi Industrial Electronics assets. June 15th, Neil Benson of Renraku begins to represent them on the corporate court. And on July 28th, following recent hardship, the AAA megacorporation Fuchi Industrial Electronics was officially dissolved. You won't see me wasting any booze by pouring one out for the dead. In August, the Pacific Prosperity Group traded economic help to the Sumatran Alliance in building the Pelawangan spaceport in exchange for the islands of Palau Batam and Palau Bintan. In October, Yamatetsu was awarded a prize from the Draco Foundation for creating the world's first underwater habitat which was self-sustaining. Last, on the corporation front, in a move that no one really wanted to hear about at that time, Renraku opened up another Arcology, this time in Munich. And I'll leave you with this nugget of truth. On November 10th, the famed civil rights activist named Robert Page made an announcement that he had finished the work of translating the ancient text which was left to him in the will of the great presidential dragon Dunkelzahn. As an aside, does it seem like the old adage of never dealing a dragon still holds true even if the dragon is dead? How much of our world after 2057 has been tainted by that dragon, At any rate, the book Page translated was called the Orzet Codex, and proves beyond any shadow of a doubt that ancient orcs did indeed have a culture and a unique language. This leads to new metahuman rights advocacy, but also has the unfortunate consequence of creating an entire genre of entertainment called orcsploitation. Essentially, using the orc culture, or caricatures of it, in order to make money from them, not for them, unfortunately. And unfortunately for you, you have now wasted an entirely good slot of time listening to the Anarchy in Podcasting Network. In closing, I want to give a hearty hello to our newest Patreon supporters, which receive monthly offerings of neo-anarchist street gear. Freshly included in this illustrious list of capable crowfunders is Free Fall, John Shannon, and Peter Smith. Thank you all. Everything you need to set up and maintain a neo-anarchist cell in your area, which at various levels now includes stickers every month, patches, dice bags, and fake corporate sins and fake corporate IDs, will be delivered to your safe house as we march bravely on. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanunium 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast, and I have been your host, the precocious past purveyor, perilously preaching palatable pâtés of potable prose pictures, plastering performance pieces patchwork onto this planet, partaking of peace pipes of possibility, and poisoning polluting political pigs. Opti. Enjoy your freedom. Someone will be along shortly to exploit it.